It's such a delight for me to be here. Thank you for inviting me. Especially at a center that honors Tsazep Toku Rinpoche, for whom I have such great esteem and friendship. You okay? Can you hear me? Good. If you can't hear me, just tell me. And I like the topic very much. I hope that was your request, that you wanted to hear about ritual in daily life. And I was thinking about it, and I was thinking that for me, one of the most profound ways of using ritual in daily life was the seven offering bowls, which I have found to be an extremely beneficial way of moving the consciousness to a clearer understanding. So I thought, unless there was some other topic you wanted me to speak about, I would be very happy to talk about the seven offering bowls as a daily practice. So do you have any other suggestions? That'll be good. Okay. There are certainly more than seven offering bowls, as any of you who have done a bit of Tibetan ritual practice know. There's the outer offerings, which are these seven bowls, and there's the inner offerings, and then there's the secret offerings. And in a lot of ways, you can say the outer offerings are what bring are what create a sense of turning the mind to the mandala of deities. That if you perform the seven offerings with some kind of aspiration, that it's easier for the mind to turn to the mandalas of the idams, and so therefore easier to move to a greater understanding, eventually to the secret offering, the mind offering. Whenever I am given a teaching and start working with it, I always do it extremely correctly. And then at a certain point, my mind kicks in, and I start thinking, why am I doing this? I don't know, you're probably not nearly so provocative and miserable as am I. Besides, you all live in Tasmania, so you live in one of those day watch hands where you're not subjected to the devils of intelligence and you just blissfully go right along with it, I'm sure. However, as a crass Canadian, I'm glad to tell you that my mind always gets in there. At some point or other, I start tattooing away, you know. Why are there seven offering bowls? Why are they two waters? Why does it sometimes say, the two waters, and then, you know, this is the way, what can I tell you? Sigh, my burden. And I am so unrepentant, I can't tell you. And what are they? Do you know what they are? Do you remember them? Any of you know them? First one?
Water.
Water for our?
Water for drinking.
Yeah.
Water.
Second one?
Water.
Yeah. Third?
Flowers.
Incense. Flowers. Third one is?
Flowers and incense.
First, third one is? Pushpa. Then?
Incense.
Then? Light. Then? Perfumed water, and then food, and then food. Why? I always ask, why?
What was the third one again? Could you get through them again?
Yeah, there are different mudras to do for them too, and I also recently had a divine inspiration and received the North American 20th century mudras, but I won't bore you with them. because this is, after all, Tasmania. But but the ones, there are many different mudras, and the different schools do slightly different mudras. But the ones that I really like, because they're so graphic, is ones that are used in Vajrayogini retreats often, on Vajra Argum, Ahom, water for drinking, there it is. Om Vajra Agyam Ahom. Surely you can all do that. Om Vajra Agyam Ahom. And then, you know, when you wash your hands, you do that, eh? Well, this is sort of like doing that, only you take your right hand and you slide it behind your left hand and back. Om Vajra Padyam Ahom. Vajra Agyam Padyam. Om Vajra Agyam Padyam. Isn't that nice? Om, I can't see your hands moving though. Om Vajra Agyam Padyam. Your right hand just slides over the back of your left hand. Your right hand in front of you goes toward you and then slides the back of your right hand over the left hand. Yeah. Well, it's because you got your left hand over here, so of course you have to reach. If you put your left hand, it's a lot easier. Om Vajra Agyam Padyam. There's the flower. Pushpe, pushpe. Just glittering away. Pushpe. Om Vajra Agyam Padyam Pushpe Dupe. There you go again. It's one of those pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps numbers. Mm-hmm. Grab your thumbs and hang on. Om Vajra Agyam Padyam Pushpe Dupe Aloke. Got it lit there? Aloke Gande. It's a blessing. Navidya, same as the first one. Shabda Aham Soha Om Vajra Agyam Padyam Pupe Dupe Alo Gande Navidya Shabda Aham Soha Om Vajra Agyam. Water for drinking. See, there it is in your hands. And your thumbs actually go in a little bit. I know it's not classic, but it is. Agyam Padyam. Water for washing. Padyam. You're watching me. Don't watch me. Watch your hands. Agyam. Now lift your hands up. Just lift your hands up. She's already trying to figure out why she's not going to be able to do it. Turn your left hand to the prayer position. And bring your right hand closer in front. And now slide the back of your right hand over the back of your left. Slide the back of your right hand, not your left hand. See, she's still watching me in her mind. She's got it in her mind. This is Nama and Rupa, ladies and gentlemen. This is a wonderful example of how concepts involve one in not being able to see what is present. Did you know that? Did you know that concepts involve you so that you can't see what's present? Because you can see where your left hand is, eh? No problem. Where is it? Are you left-handed?
Yeah.
So that should be easy. So it doesn't matter whether you do it right-handed or left-handed, except that traditionally it's done that way. You can do it the other way if you want. So all you do is rub the backs of your hands together. Great, that's it. Om Vajra Agyam Padyam Pupe Dupe Aloke Gande Navidya Shabda Aham Soha. They're lovely, aren't they?
So,
I will, and that's all I'm going to talk about tonight, as a matter of fact. So the first one is water for drinking. Why do you drink water?
Stay alive.
Oh, I think it's probably less philosophical than that. Because you're thirsty. So the first thing you have to do is bring your mind out of the future. A desire for an experience other than that which is present is about 99% of your life. So you give yourself a drink of water to cool down the desire to bring yourself out of the future. first offering that you make to the Buddhas is also the offering that you have to take in order to practice. Just stop desiring the future. Stop being thirsty. The word for thirst in Buddhism, in Pali, is tanha. And tanha also means grasping. And it's considered to be the root of most suffering. So you give yourself a drink of water. So you cut off the thirst. Cut off the thirst, you're not looking for it. So the first bowl is basically water for drinking that brings you out of the future into the present. Is that beautiful? First bowl, water for drinking. Do you all want to move up just a bit? I think some more people are staggering up the stairs there. So it will save anyone from getting hit in the back by the door. First bowl, then, is what?
Water.
Water, what kind of water?
Drinking.
Why?
Thirst.
To cut down the thirst. Yeah. To stop you from moving into the future all the time. You know, your thirst for the next moment, your thirst for becoming, the Buddha said, thirst for becoming, continuously reaching into the next thing. So you take water and you bring yourself to the present. Water for drinking. Om Vajra Agyam Aham. That's the first offering to the Buddhas. You quit running away. Running into. You keep running forward. That's your first offering to the Buddhas. To the Buddhas, right? You quit running. That's the first offering you can ever give. Quit running. Actually stop. Actually stop. It's very beautiful. So you can take that bowl for a week and practice it. I'm going to practice water for drinking every day. Okay, today I'd like to practice water for drinking. Okay, today I'd really like to practice. And, you know, you have to let go. You have to give water to the desire to do it perfectly, too. You have to let that one quit pushing you. Eventually it becomes much easier, and then you actually do offer water for drinking. So then when you offer water for drinking, then the second one is what? Water for washing. And there's all, if you look, you know, there's also in parentheses a little two words added there. Anybody know what they are? The feet. You notice that? Water for washing the feet. It's like clearing the dust of the past. So now cut off the present. Don't get encumbered by the past. Now, this is definitely getting to be a serious offering here, folks. This is not some Mickey Mouse go out and give $500,000. Nothing simple like that. This is not sign your life away. You know, do service for 52 years or anything like that. This is saying cut off the future, cut off the past, be present for the Buddhas. This is your offering for the Buddha nature. So you can see why I say it's nice to practice each of these for a week. Just even to get the idea that these are the steps, these are the offerings. Water for drinking to cut down the thirst. Water for walking to quit being dragged, for washing so that the dust of the past doesn't obscure your understanding. Right? Pretty impressive beginning to an offering. So if you do that, what would happen? What would happen if you allowed yourself not to be thirsting into the future or being caught by the dust of the past so that you could feel your understanding? What would happen? And when you're present, what is present? What is present, is it a constant thing? It's continuously changing, continuously moving. You've seen those time-lapse photographs of flowers? What's the next offering? Flowers, changing, dancing, energy of being present. It is, these offerings are so exquisite. They are such a beautiful practice. Become aware of the energy of being here. First within your own self. Just become aware of the energy. Don't find objects and subjects and fix it and create stories. Once you stop, try to move into the future. Once you let go of being encumbered by the dust of the past, then you become aware of the energy that's floating here, that's moving here, the rising and falling, dancing energies, which are not an object and they're not a subject. They're changing, dancing energy like flowers. Next one is my favorite. Incense. It's really like pulling yourself up by your own thumbs, you know. And it basically, incense is the sweet smell of success. Incense is being in harmony with what is around you. You're not in a state of friction. Incense is not trying to get from someone what they can't give. It's not trying to give to someone what they can't receive. Whether that someone is you or someone else doesn't make any difference whatsoever. Incense is seeing things as they are and acting respectfully. Incense is morality. Desiring to operate with the greatest efficiency. If it's a brick wall, look for a door. That's morality. That's the great truth of morality, is to respect whatever is present on all levels, body, speech, and mind. So incense is when you feel those inner flows and movements of energy that are flowers, then you also become aware that the entire of the outer is also flows and movements of energy. So you act with harmony of the two. And there is a sweetness of your being. And angels really do gather around and assist you because they love that sweet smell. And morality really does cause you to have a more easy, more gracious movement through life. And virtue really is its own reward. And how sweet it is. How sweet it is. Incense. You know how incense moves with the air? No war. Is there war? If you light a stick of incense, is there anywhere you can't smell it? It totally integrates without any conflict. Morality.
That's not too much.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe I will show you the North American ones. Well, water for drinking, North American, like this. Water for washing. Flowers. Incense. It came to me. It was a divine vision. It just came. This is what they have. Light. Scented water. Food and music. it was one of those, you know, inspired receivings from. Yeah, I'm not well. You got enough room there? Do you want to? Can you? Maybe just shift up a little bit. Getting a bit cramped there. We're talking about the offering bowls. The first offering bowl is water for drinking, to cut down the thirst. The thirst of going always into the future. According to the Buddha, the desire for an experience other than that which is present is suffering. Isn't that simple? And it's also true. A desire for an experience other than that which is present is suffering. So there is this continuous thirst that's reaching into the future all the time. So the first offering bowl is water for drinking, to cut down the thirst, to stop yourself from running into the future all the time. That's the offering you make to the awakened consciousness. The second offering bowl is water for washing the feet, and that's to move the dust of the past from your understanding, from your way of being present. The third offering bowl is flowers, because when you let go of thirsting after the future or being caught by the dust of the past, then the consciousness is able to feel the changing energy flows of what you really are. And the fourth offering bowl is incense, because when you actually allow yourself to feel what you really are, then you can also feel what the energies of shifting energies around you, and you can act in harmony with what is present. If you're always caught with judgment, it could be your lack of harmony. Could be. Could be maybe there's a halfway that you're not allowing yourself to process. It could be. It could be that there is an easier way to have respect than with judgment. It could be, whether you're judging yourself or judging someone else. It could be that you're interfering with this sweet smell of respect. Because if you're judging the material world, you're judging a dead world. The causes for this world have already happened. The relationship that doesn't work, the regret that you haven't done, all of those things are based on the past. What you have is the present. Incense, morality, is to be in harmony with what is present. A lot of the Tibetans I talk to don't say, when the Chinese invaded, they say, when we lost our country. Isn't that curious? There's a big difference between those two. It's very personal working with your own loss. You actually can actually work with it as energy. But if you've got an enemy, you're going to go to war. It's very straightforward. You're going to be judging. That means you're caught. That means you can't get out of that. That means you're in a loop. So morality is very different than that. Morality is sweet. It means you're willing to find the way to be with what is present. Morality means you don't quite bow quite so deeply to your personal like and your personal dislike. Maybe you still bow, but you know, about halfway down you think, maybe I don't want to go so low. Maybe I don't want to fall in love one more time so completely. Maybe I don't want to smoke this joint quite so long. Right? Maybe I want to pay attention. Maybe I want to be responsible for my harmony with my environment. Not be bitching about my difficulties. There's a big difference between the two. If you are in a state where there is grief, you grieve in harmony And you let go. And a bird sings. Nothing is permanent unless you create a subject and an object. When I was an adolescent, my sweet mother used to say to me, when I was upset, you can imagine that I was a rather dramatic adolescent, and I was upset, and my sweet mother used to say to me, "Well, just think, Cecily, what will it matter in 100 years? Which was entirely true, you know, but I wasn't exactly, you know, the ears were not primed to hear that. It was probably about 15 years later that I thought, yeah, what will it matter in 100 years? And what will matter in 100 years? You want to create your whole life as soap opera? Well, you should at least try to get paid for it. I mean, it seems reasonable that sometimes some of the plots keep going over and over. Have you noticed that? Some of you noticed that some of the plots in your life kind of repeat? So maybe then that's a good place to bring sila in, to bring that sense of sila in. To try to have a feeling, how could you have more harmony, inner and outer energies? Inner energies and outer energies, harmony. How could you work it differently? So that's incense. The sweet smell of success, as I said. And then the next one is light. Because once you can practice sila, then wisdom begins to dawn. You start understanding cause and effect. You start to have a sense of the play, the movement. You don't take things so personally. So there's a little more light in the darkness. Then the next one is scented water. And this is when there is a real awareness, a caring. This is in a way almost the movement between the Theravadin path and the Mahayana path. Because this is starting to move the bodhicitta, the mind of bodhicitta begins to work. There is less clinging to an individual self. There's aware of all beings experience grief. All beings, my mothers, boundless as the sky. Begins to come in with the scented water. It's like the drop of perfumed awareness in the ocean of consciousness. The perfume is knowing that it is not personal, that there is no inherent self, that you are not isolated, that there is an ocean of consciousness. So this is a shunya anatta teaching then begins to become more clear. First, just as a scent, just as a scent. And then the food is like the fruition, realizing that whatever action is performed, the results come, the wisdom aspect of cause and effect, the Chenrezi principle. You know that the Chenrezi you don't mind my using all these Tibetan terms. I'm assuming you know them all. If you don't, please ask me. The Chenrezi meditation is to come to the understanding that compassion is not separate from the activity that stirs to the depth of samsara. That compassion is not separate from the activity that stirs to the depth of samsara. That whatever arises is the face of compassion. And that's the seventh bowl, the fruit. But seeing the fruit from the point of view of bodhicitta. So then, of course, if you have that understanding, then a bell rings. A bell rings. In many teachings, Guru Rinpoche is said to appear in the middle of a graveyard, because what you previously wished for is dead to you now. It is a graveyard. And what is he doing? He's ringing a bell, letting you know where to go. He is bringing you to the great hearing. So you move from the outer world offerings, the offerings that involve your interaction with the outer world, at this point with the bell, with the guru arising in the middle of the graveyard, ringing the bell to take you to something a little more alive than arguing with the results of past actions, with the soap operas. And then there is the turning to the inner offerings, which are basically the sense doors as radiant energy, not the sense doors as creating subject-object. But the sense doors transform into radiant energy and become, in fact, the five Buddha wisdoms. And then they transform into the inner offering of mind only, with the two qualities of luminosity and knowing, in total union. So you can see, if you take these seven offering bowls and you work with one every day, or even one a week — I personally have found one a week quite challenging — that they really bear rich results in your practice. And it's easy to do them this way. If you take, you know, water for drinking, and you keep throughout the day, you just remember water for drinking, to cut down the thirst, to be where I am, not rushing into the future. You'll find your energy will balance a lot more. You'll find you have a greater sense of actually doing your practice on any street corner. So, do you have any questions, answers, comments, and complaints so far?
I missed what you said, going to the inner offerings and turning the sense doors into
radiance.
And then was it the mind will transform?
The offerings go outer, inner, and secret, basically. So in a very crude and thumbnail sketch kind of description, the outer teach you how to transform your usual duality, subject-object, viewing the world of duality into the face of compassion. The outer offerings, that's the seven, move you that way, so that it starts from teaching yourself not to be rushing into the future or being caught in the past, to seeing all things as the face of Chingrezig by the time you get to the last one, at which point the sound of the guru's bell draws you into the center of what previously used to catch you, but now you see as not attractive, right? You're not attracted when you see everything that is arising as the face of compassion. You're not attracted to the soap opera. You want to know what is real. You don't want to keep... just one second. You don't want to keep rerunning, you know, regurgitating the same meal. You want to move to something that's alive and potent, something that has satisfaction. So you only can do that with the outer. You cannot renounce the outer because you think you're being pure. You cannot renounce the outer because you're afraid to be involved. You cannot renounce the outer because you didn't win. You know, you cannot renounce the outer for any reason except that you have eaten of it, you are grateful for what it has to offer, and it does not fulfill what you really want. Otherwise, it's not renunciation, it's denial. So it's going to come back and come back and come back until you meet it, experience it, come to a clear understanding that it is not what you want or it is what you want. You know? On this level, when you move through these bowls, when you get to the fact that to the last bowl where you can see that everything that arises is the face of compassion, then the mind is ready to understand how to give up clinging to, grasping and clinging to self aggrandizement, trying to protect the self, trying to, the self-grasping is usually called. Right. So then the consciousness moves in with the meeting, with devotion, because that's the only reason one will do it, is out of love. Then the consciousness, and usually you don't have the two waters with the inner offerings, you just have the five symbols of the five sense doors. And so then the mind moves to those, which is basically seeing the sense doors as radiance rather than as I see you. By the radiant quality. So then you're into more the Sambhogakaya and the mandalas of the Idams and all of that understanding. But then there is one more deeper understanding, which is mind, the offering of mind, the secret offering. So body, speech, and mind, basically. Okay? Question?
Yeah. How do you rush into the future? Like, aren't you always just in the present?
I'm sorry, you speak beautifully a little fast for these Canadian ears. Could you repeat your question just a touch slower for me?
How do you rush into the future? I mean, if you're rushing out, you're just in the present anyway.
Is your mind in your body when you're asking this question? Are you thinking about the different ways that I might answer and what you might think about it? Right now, can you tell me which of your feet is cooler? Or are you particularly aware of your feet?
Huh?
Pardon?
I
mean, are you aware of your feet right now?
Yeah.
Which one is cooler?
I can't distinguish.
Why?
I don't know, I don't usually ask myself that question.
Right, what questions are you asking yourself?
I just wanted to know what you meant by it.
Why aren't you answering my question? I'm trying to tell you what I mean.
Okay. I don't know.
You don't know what?
Which feet is cooler?
That was the question two before. Do you remember the question I asked after that?
No.
Why don't you remember it? I'm answering your question. Don't think I'm not. Why don't you remember it? Why? Because your mind was reaching for something else. If your mind is reaching for something else, you cannot hear what I'm saying. Does that answer your question? Does that satisfy you? Thank you. And it's a hard discipline. It's a hard discipline. And so don't try to do it all the time. But the power, you have a lot more power with your mind in your feet than you do with your mind chasing an idea. And there is no way I can give you any evidence of that other than suggest you try it for yourself. If your mind is not in your body or not in the present, you're a pushover. Because you're going to miss 2/3 of what's going on around you. And you get hungry and you keep chasing the ideas and you get split off and you keep feeling like you're going to get it. I wrote a thesis on this. It was called The 1960s. Is that a reasonable? Thank you. It's a good question. And, you know, I'm glad you're asking. Anyone else?
I can't quite grasp what you mean when you said that you begin to see everything as moving as if the, the words that you use.
The face of Cheng Weizi. Yeah. All activity. In the Cheng Weizi sadhana that I do most of the time when I'm working with Cheng Weizi, it says, I am practicing this meditation in order to understand that the activity that stirs to the depth of samsara is not different from Cheng Weizi. Is not different from compassion. And what I mean is, whatever arises is compassionate. Isn't that a nasty thing to say? I mean, really. Okay, well, Suze, for you, whatever arises is compassionate. Except if Suze doesn't agree. Then how's that? Is that okay? Okay, so you all have that. You check with her. I name you Queen of the Universe. And the best of Irish luck is the universe might not name you that. All that arises is a face of compassion. Because there is either ignorance or there is knowing. If I fall over a curb, I could say that was the face of compassion tapping me gently on the shoulder or wherever it was I fell and saying, this is a curb, practice awareness. And my ignorance has suddenly been transmuted into wisdom. Very suddenly, on some occasions.
So that's a bit like what you were saying about...
Can everyone hear?
Is that a bit like what you were saying about stopping to approve of things, things are okay the way they are?
I never said that. I said, say I approve 6 times a day and watch your reaction. Oh. And I would not say things are okay the way they are. I would certainly not say that because you're one of those things. I am so mean to you.
Sorry,
I don't know why you bother.
aside from that, that's what I think you're saying. That's what it seems like to me when you say that everything is compassion. I guess maybe if I was going to explain it, that's sort of what I'd say. Like, it's like, for me, that would be a sense that things are okay. But that's
yes.
Not what you mean?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I would say that. But I think that by saying it that way, there can tend to be a kind of a little close the eyes and drift along mentality. And in fact, that isn't true. I mean, we have intelligence and we're not going to be sung a lullaby all the time. And one part of the quality of mind is knowing.
So it's not so much that things are okay, but more perhaps an openness to them.
Exactly. Now that I would totally agree with. I would totally agree with you. Yeah. Exactly.
Because sometimes I can't quite, the way you say it, you know, it's not like, you need to translate it into...
I do. I need a translator. From Canada to Tasmania, I do.
I don't think it's that. I think it's just individual. You know, people say things.
But there are also ways of using language that are very different in different countries, and so that's why I really appreciate your questions because I could be saying something that in Canada would have quite a different inference than it has here. So yeah, but not okay. I don't like that okay because there's a kind of a I should be all right, lullaby and good night. That is not true. And then if something terrible happens, you really resent it, you know. The Buddha also remarked on the fact that, you know, the best way to really get into a state of absolute rage was to have your bliss interrupted. And ain't it the truth? You know, you're just going along doing your usually Sunday afternoon thing and the house burns down, you get really put off.
It's a big wake-up.
Yeah. I mean, the house burning down can be the smallest thing. Somebody reading, taking your paper before you finished reading it, right? Your little rituals, you know, little ritual houses burned down by the vicissitudes of life. And you get really not very nice, huh? Because it's your bliss and you deserve it and la-di-da. But that could also be the face of compassion giving you a way to watch how much you prefer to be asleep. You know, it could be. We have a often we have a feeling that if we're good, everything will be good. And if things aren't good, then it must be our fault. We must be doing. People who join religious groups that are outsider groups, you know, like weird Buddhist groups and stuff like that, often don't fit comfortably. Not all of them, not at all. Very tolerant or able to hear other views. Right? Because we like to feel safe, and then that means we're loved, we're right. And there is a great need to feel loved and safe and right. But you should be able to feel love and safe and right in the universe. You practice refuge until you know that there is only refuge. Yeah. You practice refuge, but it's important that you understand you're practicing the refuge. And the practice that you're doing, and I don't want to cause pain, but whatever refuge you're practicing is not going to be able to move through death rebirth. So every once in a while, if what you practice as your bliss, your refuge, gets interrupted, you could take it as a little messenger, a little test pattern running through, you know, like sometimes they do on the radio. This is a test to see whether our hurricane warning thing works or something, you know. It's a little test pattern just to see whether you can practice refuge without your usual conditions. Because we do have that kind of intelligence, we can actually do that. We are enormously talented at transmuting pain, if we wish to. We are capable of transmuting all the pain of our environment into the beloved Guru, if we wish to. The bell can ring any time in the graveyard, if we wish it. You know, and the permission to give that, the permission, the power to give that permission is ours. Nobody else's. Our choice. Our ability. And if we don't wish it, that's okay too. You got all seven bowls to work with. You're not asked to be what you are not. You're just asked to know it's a long journey. And don't assume that where you are is a pinnacle. I love the word knowledge. Yeah. A ledge of knowing. Mm-hmm. It's like some kind of cupboard, folks. And it feels good, you know, and you're safe from bumps. But there are lots of cupboards, lots of ledges. Yeah, because the eighth is the reaction to doing the offerings. Music, that's when the guru arises. The guru rings the bell in the middle of the graveyard when you do the seven offerings. And that's really true. It really happens. You will hear the bell when you do the offerings. It's absolutely true. It's one of those amazing things where you promise something and when you get there, you actually get it. It is not a false offer. Yeah, the seven bells and then the action. So do you remember them? Om Vajra Argyamahum, Om Vajra Padyavahum, Om Vajra Purtayahum, Om Vajra Dupayahum, Om Vajra Lokayahum, Om Vajra Gandayahum, Om Vajra Adnavidyahum, Vajra Shabda. Ahum soha. Usually it's just two fingers, you know. Yeah. Anybody didn't get them?
Which one's good?
Gande.
Yeah, which one is the...
That's the blessing, that's the scented water. Yeah, that's the blessing coming from your palms. You know? Energy, fire and water. So now what?
If you're still going to keep talking, can I ask you about? Can I ask you about the significance of saying mantra, perhaps?
Which mantra?
I guess mantra in general. Because it seems a bit. I mean, I have great faith in that. It's something I like to do, but it does seem a little odd to average Western mind. So
mantra.
Yeah.
Okay, that's moving into the second of the set of offering bowls. That's the sound as radiance. Okay, and in you have three bodies, and this body, this brain, runs the physical body, and it's a linear mind, and it has six sense doors, which are. Mind. And then this body runs the energy body or the speech body, which is the inner offerings. And it has three sense doors, which are sight, sound, and mind. So what do those angels do? You know those Christmas angels on Christmas cards? What are they doing? They got those halos and they're going around blowing horns and playing harps. So what are the three?
Sound.
Sound.
And music.
Sound is music.
It's music, yeah.
And sight, and those halos.
Yeah.
Those halos. And this fluttering energy. They got these feathers, right? This fluttering energy. So that's what angels do. They go around radiating light and playing music, right? Mm-hmm. And this body has three sense doors. Sight, sound, and mind. Okay? Okay. That's background.
Okay.
So, of course you're all looking at me. Isn't that just delightful? And you're all seeing me. That's okay, isn't it? You can tolerate that. Okay. And now, while you're looking at me, can you see light reflecting off my glasses? Everybody? Okay, while you're looking at me, start looking, instead of at me, look at the light reflecting off my glasses. Okay? You're looking at the light, not at me. Okay? Now don't write, just do this. Okay? Just do this. It's fun, I promise. At the bottom of the box, there's a prize. And while you're looking at the light reflecting off my glasses, just keep looking at me, but pay attention to the surface of your right eye. And try to feel the air on the surface of your right eye. And work at it a bit. Really let yourself be aware of the surface of your right eye. That's great. And now imagine that actually the light reflecting off my glasses is actually coming into your right eye, rather than you're looking at my glasses. That your eye is actually receiving that light. And just feel it coming into your eye. Isn't that nice? A little more. And do the same with your left eye. It's beautiful. Just a touch more. And you notice that there's sound of the traffic out there and your ears tend to focus out there, but actually let the sound come into your right ear. And feel it. The sound vibrating on your eardrum. Like waves of sound entering in, moving through your body. Your left ear. And the light coming in your eyes. And the sound coming in your ears meets somewhere in your mind, somewhere. See if you can feel that point. And just be aware of the space around you from that point. You can actually drop that point down to your throat. Down into your heart center if you want. It's very nice in the heart center. A surprise in the Cracker Jack. Is that interesting? Did you feel a shift? Mm-hmm. How much did you do it?
As much as I could, but yeah. I find it really hard to.
Which point?
I guess when it was a case of things meeting inside, I could. I'm not sure if I.
Were you able to do the light, imagining the light coming in?
I was, but I'm not sure if it's what.
Sure you were. Okay. You absolutely were. Okay. And was that an interesting idea? That the light was coming in rather than you were going out?
Yeah. That's not stunning, but yes.
Oh, I know it wasn't stunning. I understand that. I know that. But just a little shift. Just a little shift, like a dimmer switch kind of shift.
Yeah.
That's right. So that dimmer shift, the switch kind of shift, is when you're starting to allow this body to have a certain amount of say. So that you can be aware both of this body and of this body. This body tends to work on linear time. This body tends to work more in a sense of globes of light and sound and globes. So when you feel that kind of, did you all feel a sort of like a dimmer switch had been turned slightly? Yeah. Anybody not feel that? Okay. And so that's when you're not putting all your focus on what you're going to get on subject-object, but you're starting to allow yourself to just see light and sound as energy. So when you're saying mantra and you repeat it over and over again, your mind is not going into the future. After a while, you're just working with the sound and it does the same thing. A lot of, most drama was a religious practice in the beginning, and people wore masks to change the way they use their eyes, not subject-object. And it changes your whole sense stores, so you actually start to perceive more from this realm than that one, which is a transcendent state. It transcends your usual state. I know it isn't stunning. The point is that it is just a slight shift and you don't lose your present moment. Mm-hmm. The idea is not to make some great leap over some great cliff and have things totally changed, because that's basically, you know, from my point of view, breakthroughs are very similar to breakdowns. And you don't have any compassion when you perform that way because you don't know how you got there. You know? So you're not going to be any use to anybody else. You know?
So, earlier when you were talking about the present, the pushpa, the plow, use a different
Pushpa, yeah. Pushpa, it is. Yeah, that's what it's spelled, but it's usually pronounced pupe.
In
Hindi,
it's pushpa and so on.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And you talked about the mother being a flower. And
yeah.
The mama, both the teachers, the mama beads are flowers?
Yeah, and in fact, the oldest rosaries were actually rose. Rosary. And garlands are actually flowers.
So
and it's the flowering moment. Yeah, in a certain way. I mean, it has to do with the speech realm. You know, body, speech, and mind, or energy realm. Yeah. Three realms that need to come into harmony. It's the realm of the finite, temporal realm, the realm of the infinite, and the realm of all the energies moving in between. What happens when people are overwhelmed a lot by emotion is they're losing this one because too much of this one is overflowing. And so how to balance the three? There's nothing wrong, it's just the sense of balance is out. So how to resurrect that balance is what the question is. Interesting, isn't it? It is profoundly interesting.
So is there a practice that you would suggest for particular situations? Oh, I mean, out here.
For what? For radiance?
For balancing out, like in a situation where you're overcome with some sort of
Oh, yeah. If you have a lot of emotion coming up and you're not knowing how to handle it, you take off your right sock and you massage your right foot as if it were a newborn baby. You ever touched a newborn baby's skin? Incredible. Mm-hmm. And you stroke your right foot for 7 minutes and you hum. And no matter what emotion comes up, you just keep your focus and you keep stroking and you just keep humming. And you don't have any phone ring, you don't have anything happen. Then you switch to your left foot for 7 minutes. And then when you finish doing that, you lie back and you think of beautiful places that your feet have taken you and you thank them. And it brings the consciousness back here. So the emotion, a lot of emotion will probably come up when you're doing the foot thing. That's why you listen to the humming and you keep focusing on the sense of touch. So you're not focusing on the emotion, you're not trying to change it, you're just letting it be a wind, it will just blow through. You're keeping your focus on the physical, on the sense of touch. So then the emotion is just a wind, it can finish, and you're here. It's very useful. For many people, it's very useful.
And to do for somebody else?
Yeah, I think it's very good for people to do themselves. To know that you can care for yourself, you know. The reason why you need someone to care for you is that you know you're worth caring for. So when you know you're worth caring for, you can do it for yourself. So that you're not spending your life trying to get somebody else to care for you. If you know you're worth caring for, you're not going to be trying to manipulate other people into convincing you of that fact. You know? So it's a very good thing for people to do for themselves, actually. You're welcome.
So why do we do 7 or 8? Why not fewer?
I don't know, but and sometimes you do thousands and thousands of Samantabhadra offerings. Hundreds of thousands. Have you been to the Manjushri Institute in England? I guess you're Kelsen Gyatso there. He has, it is magnificent, that their Gompa there. And I did Vajrayana Mahamudra retreat there. Yeah, that was really fascinating. and they have, it's an amazing place. It was an old priory in England, and it's huge. And hundreds of students, and so they, lots of good slave labor. You know, that's what, one of these days I'll become a teacher, and then I'm going to have hundreds of students, and then I'll have lots of slave labor. I think this is a great idea. Of course, by the time I get into that position, I probably won't consider them slave labor. So I guess my whole plan is just going to shoot itself down before I even get off the cushion here. Oh, well. they have beautiful statues, and they have offering bowls, like hundreds of offering bowls of water or butter lamps. And in Tibetan, a lot of in Sikkim and in North India and a lot of places like that. It's so amazing. You just walk into some of these places and it's just like a blaze of butter lamps. But the seven are basically the outer offerings, and from my understanding, that's what you're doing with them. But why there's only seven, je ne sais quoi. Do you know? Yeah. Does anyone know?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Right, seven, the lucky number.
There's seven chakras, unless there's nine, unless there's 13, unless...
Correspond with the water
pool. Yes, they do.
Well, isn't there seven because there's seven of those?
Or are there seven of those because there's seven of those?
I just don't know.
Which created another seven?
Yeah, we want to know which came first, the chicken or the egg. That's right. We're working at it. Sort of. Yes.
When I came to my life,
One of the reasons why it's difficult to maintain a sitting practice is because you haven't been doing it.
But I have.
Every day?
Comes and goes.
Yeah, so you haven't been doing a daily practice. How do you do, Cecily? My name is... You can now change that story. Can't you? She, regretfully, she may consider it. What?
Consistently.
Yeah. You plebeians, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I got you. I heard you. Yes? What? You were asking me why you can't do it, and I said you can't do it because you haven't been doing it. That is to say, it's a habit. And if you want to do it, you have to set it up like a habit. You now have a habit that you can't do it, and that is a habitual thought as well. So when you actually set up the habit of sitting every day, you will still have the habitual thought that you can't sit every day. Until you're interested in sitting. So I would recommend that you decide that you... What do you do when you get up in the morning? Do you make tea or coffee or water or what? Is something to drink?
Turn the computer on.
You turn the computer on? And then do you make tea or coffee?
And then make the coffee.
Okay, and then you make the coffee. So get up in the morning, turn the computer on, make your coffee, and go back into your... Is your computer in your bedroom? Good. It's not a serious case. It's not terminal. I was scared there for a minute. Go back into your bedroom with your coffee. And sit on your bed and put the coffee down beside you and take refuge. Do you take refuge? Okay. And take refuge. And make a statement of aspiration that while you drink the coffee, you would like to sit there and practice meditation for 5 minutes. Then, when the 5 minutes is up, go to play with the computer. So you hook the meditation to the coffee. Do you understand? To something you like. You start that way. And then you keep building it and building it. At some point, you will forget to turn the computer on first. I promise. You're welcome.
Working on addiction to create an addiction.
Oh, thanks. I hadn't really thought of it in those terms, but there you go. Yeah, it is. It's association. If there is something you do every morning and something you'd like to do every morning, put them together. If it's not playing with a computer and meditating, if it's having coffee and meditating, you can do it. You know? So you work with your habits. You don't try to do what you can't do. You try to figure out how to do. You know, probably the one thing that will ruin trying to train yourself to do a meditation practice, probably the one thing that will make it very unlikely that you'll get over that hump, unless you're really a masochist, is idealism. If you have some kind of ideal about how you're supposed to sit, and you don't have a regular practice, and you don't have a group of people you sit with, you're probably going to drive yourself into sitting ideally for 3 or 4 days, and then you're going to be saying, forget it, or you're working with guilt or something. The best thing is to start modestly and without trying to be in a full lotus in front of a perfect shrine. Make your aspiration your shrine, take refuge, and make it something you can do. 5 minutes is great. Start 5 minutes, it will grow. And for that 5 minutes, do sit there. Don't get up. Just for that 5 minutes. Then as soon as the 5 minutes is over, share the merit and move.
What is the resistance?
Pardon?
What is that resistance that sets in after
a certain period of time? Resistance is just really straightforward. It's, you know, there are so many things it can be, but for some people, resistance is just making sure that they set it up for themselves so that if they fail, they'll already have known they were going to. A lot of people have that kind of voice in their mind, you know, the expert there that's telling them, oh, you're probably not going to keep doing this, so that when they probably don't keep doing it, they can say, there, I knew I was going to be right. I knew I was going to be right that I'm a total failure. a lot of them are that kind of things. But really, resistance is to doing something different than you've done it before. The very best way to sit is to have someone sit with you in the beginning. That's just a wonderful way to learn to sit. It's probably a lot harder to teach yourself to do a daily practice than it is to go on retreat. For me now, it's very hard not to do a daily practice. Even if I only do half an hour, because my time is... I have commitments. Huh? Oh, in the cycle? Oh, yeah. First five... to 7 minutes, the mind goes in and out. Oh yeah, gee, did I? Oh no, yeah, you know, adjust the cushion, la di 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 di. Mind wandering, blah 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 blah. And you just notice that the mind is wandering. It's fine, and you just bring it back. Notice it's wandering, bring it back. And after about 5 to 7 minutes, it begins to settle down. About 10 to 15 minutes, it reaches its kind of the la crème de la crème. And then it slides downhill again for about 5 minutes. And the mind actually goes in 15 to 20 minute cycles. It repeats that again. That's why you sit for an hour or 55 minutes, because you go through 3 cycles of the mind. So you're sitting and you have one time of like coming to some kind of distillation, and then a second time which is a little bit deeper, and then a third time a little bit deeper. Then you walk or you change your posture. So yeah, it's about a 15-20 minute cycle. Human minds do. Where you go from restlessness to peak interest to restlessness. Is that what you were asking? Okay. If you watch, usually you'll look at your watch. If you're sitting for like 3/4 of an hour or something, you usually look at your watch. The first time it's around 5 minutes. The second time it's around 15, 20 minutes. Right? And you watch that. That's very interesting. That's when the mind starts doing its restless thing. So if you feel that impulse to look at your watch and you just say, oh, it's probably 5 minutes, and I think I'll just keep watching and see the second time I feel, in the next span of time that passes, that I feel like looking at my watch, that's when I want to know what time it is. To see the desire, but don't buy into it that time, and just see when the second cycle comes around. And start timing your own mind. Try, you know, see how your own mind responds. But if you do that, and you don't, when you feel the restlessness and you don't just immediately look at your watch or, you know, start moving around or stuff, but just notice the restlessness and just relax into it. And just notice whether the right side of your body or the left side of your body gets more tense when you're restless, or, you know, just watch and see, you know, whether you get angry or sleepy. Just be interested in restlessness. Then the next thing that happens is that you'll find that your mind will just not start cueing you to look at your watch or anything. 2 or 3 days of not looking at your watch, but just watching the restlessness. Instead, when it's 5 minutes before your time is up, your mind will say, well, look at your watch, and you look, it'll be 5 minutes before. And it only takes 3 days for that to switch. Within 3 days, your mind will... You know, you can tell yourself when you want to wake up and all that, eh? Did you know that? There is someone home. And it is possible to dialogue. And you don't have to believe the resistance. It's just resistance. Oh, hum.
Did you mean by take refuge?
Do you have a sense of refuge? Any way you take refuge in any particular religion or something?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whatever is specific to the person, there are many, many ways to take refuge. So that's all. I was asking her what her form of, if she had a form of refuge. So if she didn't, I have a no-name brand kind of one that I often give out to people that I could have suggested. It's yellow. Is it getting a little warm and close in here, folks? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Yes.
With the three physical, or the three bodies that you've been talking about, so the relationship to the certain chakra.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of relationship, especially with this body. This body is all the, you know, like you've seen those acupressure charts. I mean, that's basically the what this body looks like, you know. in a bikini. His body looks different than that in a bikini, and his body looks like those acupuncture charts in a bikini. And they interpenetrate each other. Is there another question? Is that okay? Yes.
The significance of having the bowls one rice grain apart and pulled to the top, is that just to make sure that you're very present while you're sitting?
I think so, you know. I have heard a lot of different stories about this, but my secret belief is that's just a practice awareness. You know, fill them to the brim, so that you're being generous, but don't let them slop over, because that's, you know, that's a lack of awareness and care and disrespectful. And exactly one rice grain apart, that's really hard. There's sometimes there's a little fold in the cloth there.
The hot, all the bowls together, they're all just one
last time. Oh, you should see. That's why I said slave labor. I mean, major. Incroyable. Amazing. It's amazing. It is such a work of art, that's it. It's incredible. We should do a tour sometime, Tibetan monasteries around the world. Eh? This one does tormas really well, but that one. Yes?
Is the sequence very significant? Because I find I just sort of send up all sorts of
things. The sequence, I think, is very important, yeah. But because I just explained it, yeah, I mean, yeah. they build one on the other. Yeah, they build.
In a relative sense, they build on one another.
Yeah, and they absolutely do accumulate. Oh, dear. There's no discipline. Any more questions, answers, comments, or complaints, or are you just waiting to get out that door? So you feel this very beautiful gold light in your heart. It's absolutely an exquisite light. Honey. Gold light, amber light, just oozing away in your heart center there. It spreads right through the trunk of your body. Spreads down your arms and legs, up through your head. Beautiful light. Just causes all difficulty and pain in your body to be softened and dissolve. Moves out through your pores in all directions, above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters. Moves through walls and floors, ceilings. Moves through the earth, moves through all matter. Moves infinitely throughout time and space and wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, of speech, or of mind. This light just temporarily assuages it. And you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings so there is less suffering. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you. Thank you.